This is Terry Finneman. Today is June 10th, 2020. I am interviewing Dave Bordewick of the South Dakota Newspaper Association for the Community Journalism in Middle America, Challenges and Innovations of COVID-19 Coverage Oral History Project. So Dave, tell us, how long have you worked in journalism?
Pretty much my entire professional career, going on 35 years.
And tell us a little bit about your background. Where have you all worked in that time?
Well, I started out actually in high school. I had an older brother who owned the hometown newspaper, the Corsica Globe in Corsica, South Dakota. And so I worked for him in high school, and that's really kind of in part what got my interest in journalism, and then went to school for journalism at South Dakota State University and got a degree in journalism there. And then really settled on newspaper journalism. My first job out of college was working as editor of a weekly newspaper, the Lake Preston Times here in South Dakota. And then after a detour to Columbia, Missouri for a few years where I worked as well as went to school part-time there, I returned to work for my brother then, who had by then bought a few more weekly newspapers and served as editor of the weekly newspapers he bought, got married also a newspaper journalist. So we both worked here at the Brookings Register. She was in the news side. I was on the advertising side then. And then we ended up in Minnesota in St. Cloud because my wife was editor of a newspaper there. And I took a little bit of a turn and became editor of a magazine for a trade association that represented community banks across the nation, the Independent Bankers Association of America, and worked for years editing their magazine and writing speeches and press releases and so forth for that association. Before returning to South Dakota in 1995, when a position was opening here at South Dakota Newspaper Association, the longtime director, Keith Jensen, was retiring, and my wife and I both decided that it would be great to be able to return to South Dakota, to return to Brookings, where we both went to school. So I applied, and fortunate enough to get the job at SDNA in 1995, and I worked for a year, basically, and transitioned with Keith, who was retiring in 1996, so I sort of mentored under him for a year, and then took over as what was called then general manager. We now call the position executive director in 1996. And so I've been in that role since. And then a year ago, last fall, I added an additional role as executive director of South Dakota News Watch, which is as a nonprofit independent journalism organization here in South Dakota that reports and distributes news across the state.
So how many newspapers are there in South Dakota?
We have 122 newspapers in South Dakota. We had 11 of those were dailies. Now that's a little bit different because what traditionally was known as a daily, publishing 5 or 6 or 7 days a week. Some of those, because of the pandemic, are publishing much less. So I'm not sure if they're dailies or weeklies or something in between right now.
When did you first notice the impact of the pandemic on the industry in your state?
Oh boy. I think it was probably, that 2nd of March. And that coincided sort of when, it really was hitting home personally for us as well. My wife and I were scheduled to go to Arizona for a better part of a week just to visit some family and get away a bit in March. And then at the last minute, things were really, really happening. I think about March 10th, it was, we decided, look, we can't take this trip. We're not going to do this. And thankfully we didn't. And then it was shortly thereafter, within days, that things were starting to really happen. And so it was certainly that second week in March, third week in March, when we were really seeing things happening and all of a sudden things were changing rapidly fast, not only, for our newspapers, but just broadly as well across the country.
So talk about when those newspapers were starting to contact you during that initial time, what was the immediate impact on the industry that they were telling you?
Well, you know, there was just, I think, a lot of questions and concern about, you know, what does this all mean right now? You know, what's going to happen here? And I think it, when we started really getting questions and concerns is when we started seeing, you know, the news and these events happening with government entities, you know, saying, look, we need to restrict business access, and we need to restrict activity and movement within communities and within states. And suddenly our newspapers are saying, well, what's that going to mean for us? Are we going to be able to publish a newspaper, distribute a newspaper? Are we going to be able to report the news? And that, you know, suddenly became, I think, the first and foremost, the biggest concern that I was hearing is just this question about, are we going to be able to function as a newspaper now that we're seeing things shut down commercially and otherwise?
I know that this happened in other states, but I'm not sure about South Dakota. Were reporters deemed essential workers officially in South Dakota?
No, because there was never any, you know, statewide lockdown or statewide restrictions put in place by our governor. But that was a real question early on in those first few weeks of the middle of the month of March there, and first few weeks when this was all blowing up, because suddenly, you know, I was seeing my colleagues around the country who were in the other states that were being shut down were struggling to get those designations as essential, you know, businesses as journalists to be essential to be able to conduct and do their work. And you know, so that was, again, that was something I've never dealt with, you know, this whole business of, well, we need to have this designation as being essential in order to do our jobs. And that just, you know, we were struggling to sort of understand what does that really mean and how does that work? But again, in South Dakota, that never happened. We did have a few communities, larger communities that put restrictions in place. And I know the newspapers within those communities, such as Sioux Falls and Rapid City, worked with their local governments, their mayors, to ensure that, you know, that they had those designations. But we never had anything done at the statewide level. We did send a letter to the governor, you know, when we didn't know if that was going to happen statewide or not. And we just said, look, if you are to shut down the state, we want to ensure that our member newspapers and those that work for the newspapers are deemed as essential workers and are able to do their work. So, but again, it never came to that.
Did you get any kind of a reply to that anyway?
We did not. No. You know, I had forwarded to the governor's office through the chief of staff in the governor's office. And, you know, the response I got was that, look, we're getting lots of these kinds of letters from lots of different types of businesses and industries. And I just sort of got the sense that we'll add this to the list, but it never went beyond that.
So the pandemic has resulted in a number of newspapers across the country having to close. In South Dakota, you did have some newspapers close. Tell us about that.
Yes, we had two weekly newspapers close in South Dakota, the DeSmit News and the Lake Preston Times, both owned by one individual, one publisher, Dale Blagan. And this happened in April. I think April 1st was his last issue for both those newspapers. It was a case of Dale, who's in his mid-70s and had been trying to sell both papers for several years unsuccessfully, just got to the point where he said, look, I can't jeopardize my retirement any further right now. This pandemic has just suddenly accelerated the decline of his business. He says, I'm losing every money each week I put out the paper. And he says, I can't afford to go in the hole any further with this. He said, I have to get out of this. And since I'm not able to find the buyers, the only other alternative I have is just to cease publication. So he did. And he announced it with his April 1st edition said, this is it, I'm done. And so those two newspapers, long time, over 100-year-old newspapers, ceased publication at that point.
How did that make you feel? I mean, as the director of the Newspaper Association, to see these newspapers that had been around in their communities for like 100 years have to close.
Well, you know, for me, it was personal as well, because, like I said, my first job out of college was working at the Lake Preston Times. And in fact, I went to work at the Lake Preston Times. That's when, in 1984, when Dale Blagan bought that newspaper and he was looking for an editor. And so I became his first editor there. And so I, you know, sort of felt kind of, you know, connected to that that newspaper and that community. And it was certainly personal to me. But on a professional level, as far as executive director of the association, it was also, you know, a bit of a wake-up call too, right? I mean, it was like, okay, this is real now. This is, you know, yes, we see what's happening in the pandemic, but now it's actually causing a couple of our flags to cease publication. You know, the sirens are going off. You know, that was sort of my feeling at the time. It's like, you know, what's next? Where's this going to go next? You know,
we're going to talk in a minute about innovations that you've seen in the state. But as long as we're talking about these two newspapers, tell us what's happened since then.
Right. So, you know, the interesting story is then after Dale closed the newspapers, and it had been no surprise within those communities that he had been trying to sell them for several years and so forth. But I think obviously once those newspapers closed, it really shocked people in the communities as well. And they suddenly realized, look, we no longer have this paper every Wednesday in our community. And so suddenly there were folks within both communities like Preston DeSmit rallying to figure out a way to, you know, restart a newspaper. And after a few weeks of working furiously, it was basically a committee of folks within both communities, the local development corporations bought the assets of the old newspapers, the DeSmit News and Lake Preston Times, from Dale, and restarted what's now a consolidated one newspaper called the Kingsbury Journal. And they started publication here in May. And but it's being done by a committee of community volunteers at this point. They're sort of, you know, rolled up their sleeves and went to work and figured out how to do this. We've been assisting where we can in terms of giving advice and some expertise along the way, as well as lots of other newspapers have jumped in to help them where they can. So they've put out this week will be their third edition, I believe, that they'll put out. You know, so far it looks great. They've gotten good community support. People are excited about it. But then again, you know, we'll see. You know, as I said, it's a sort of a volunteer group that's doing it right now, and it's going to take more than just volunteers in the long term in order for that to succeed. And so I think obviously they're sort of looking like, okay, now we got sort of a foothold. How do we build this thing and for the long term? And hopefully it can happen. But you know, right now it's sort of a sudden feel-good story out of something that was, you know, pretty sad a month or so ago.
What furloughs or production changes are you aware of in newspapers in your state?
As far as specifically for furloughs, we've had a few of our larger newspapers, our daily newspapers, such as the Argus Leader in Sioux Falls, Watertown Public Opinion, and Aberdeen American News, all which are owned by the same company, Gannett, as well as the Rapid City Journal, which is owned by Lee Enterprises. All of those newspapers have implemented furloughs for staff. And it varies depending on the company. But it's basically, you know, everyone who works at those newspapers is either, you know, taking a week off of unpaid leave once a month or a version of that as a reduction in force, or, you know, temporary reduction in force to help them get through this difficult time. And then we've had some of our daily newspapers who have reduced print publication days from anywhere like Mitchell, which has gone now down to only 2 days a week in which they are printing a newspaper midweek and then on the weekend. And
what was it before? Was it 7 days a week?
Mitchell was 5 days. They had been six. Last year, they reduced to 5, and then now this spring, they reduced to 2 days. So they made that final cut. The other days of the week, they're putting up, you know, an e-edition, an electronic version of the newspaper that they're make available to their subscribers. And then we've had, for instance, here in Brookings, the Brookings Register, which was a 6-day-a-week newspaper, eliminated their Saturday edition. So they are now at 5 days-a-week publication. Rapid City Journal reduced publication frequency. They're at, I think 5 right now is where they're at. They were, you know, forever a 7-day-a-week paper, but they're at 5 now. So,
you know, it's kind of interesting. The industry has been discussing for years already at what point will print end and online begin. It's really been something to see in the sudden state of emergency how quickly that has had to come into play.
Right. Right. I mean, that whole debate, you know, that's like you say, that whole back and forth about, you know, when will it happen, how it will happen. Well, the pandemic forced the hand, obviously, for several publishers, several newspaper groups, and we're seeing that in South Dakota as well.
So going off of that, talk to us a little bit more about the financials and how the financials of newspapers and the relationship with advertising has changed and not changed during the pandemic.
Well, the biggest change is there's less of it. There's less advertising just because, you know, either some of their types of advertisers, such as restaurants and bars and retail outlets and retail businesses, were closed for a period of time, or, you know, were restricted in terms of the business they were doing. They simply, you know, pulled back on their advertising. And what I heard from publishers who were hearing from advertisers was, look, we just don't know, and we can't afford to advertise right now because we don't know what the future is going to hold, and whatever cash we have, we need to hold on to right now. And so, you know, we're hearing and still hearing from newspapers who are seeing advertising revenue reductions from 30 to 40, even 50% in their advertising that was lost. And to some degrees, here we are in, you know, June 10th, and they're still faced with reduced advertising, even though supposedly, you know, businesses are opening back up to some degree and so forth. Businesses and others are still very hesitant to advertise, and that has been a real impact, obviously, for a lot of our newspapers.
You know, going off that, kind of similar to what we were just saying, I mean, another thing the industry has been discussing for years already is what the business model of newspapers should be. And now that we're seeing advertising, the main financial base supporting us, go away, do you have any kind of thoughts right now as to what does need to be a sustainable business model for us? Or do you think this is just kind of an unusual blip and then things will return to normal?
Well, I think obviously, you know, that's the big question, and quite honestly, Terry, I don't think things are going to return to normal. And when I say things, business, advertising, the business model for newspapers, basically for all news media, are not going to return to what they were pre-pandemic. It's just, I don't think anyone really in their heart of hearts believes that either. I think everyone realizes that things are certainly going to be different. Now, publishers, member newspapers are hopeful that things will return to a degree in terms of revenue that allows them to, you know, be sustainable as a newspaper, as a business within their communities. That's what their hope is. Right now, a lot of our newspapers are being sustained by participation in the Paycheck Protection Program, the federal program that, you know, allowed them to access federal money here this spring. We surveyed our newspapers and found that, you know, more than 3/4 of our member newspapers, of our 122 newspapers, are participating in that program. And that is really their lifeline right now. And I think the newspapers, as well as their advertisers, are sort of hoping that, okay, that lifeline will go away because that program does end down the road, that when it does go away, that they can return to some sense of of more sustainable business activity. In other words, more advertising revenue. But that's not certain. That's by no means a guarantee. And that's still the big question right now. What is this fall going to look like? What is 2021 going to look like? I mean, I've talked to publishers who say, look, they're supposed to be budgeting for the next, you know, fiscal year and so forth. And they're afraid to budget more than the next 3 months, let alone a year. So, you know, to the question about what does the model look like for the future for newspapers, you know, obviously newspapers and the industry overall are seeing good readership, strong readership. People are buying, you know, buying copies of the newspaper or subscribing to a newspaper, either online or the print edition, and they are subscribing. But that alone, you know, obviously is not the sustainable business model. It needs to be more than subscriptions. So, you know, there is talk and there's also activity happening around the country where newspapers are, you know, looking at to get into, you know, asking for contributions, basically, you know, sort of look, contribute to our newspaper within the community, because if you value that importance of local news and journalism, then we need your support beyond just subscribing to a newspaper or advertising, which has gone away. Contribute to this newspaper. And so there may be more of that to come.
So adding on to our earlier discussion, what are some other innovations that you have seen newspapers in South Dakota do during this time?
Well, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily an innovation, but we've seen newspapers that are printing are reducing the number of pages they're printing in each edition, or they're, you know, tightening the news hole at the space that's available for news within each newspaper, and it just kind of a cost savings measure. You know, for instance, for some of our weekly newspapers, if they were printing 20 or 24 pages prior to the pandemic, perhaps now they're printing 12 pages, you know, half that, as a way to save expense and printing costs. That's been a prevalent thing we've seen in our state. You know, innovations, I think you've seen, you know, I've seen more focus by newspapers now about how to move to more of a digital audience, how to do a better job of providing their news and journalism to their readers digitally, as opposed to, you know, traditional print. I think that's just sort of accelerated their motivation to look at that and figure that out, even for some of our smallest newspapers.
How have you as a state association responded to try to help your newspapers?
You know, probably the primary thing has just been sort of a resource of information. And, you know, particularly in March and April, we were sending what we called COVID-19 updates for newspapers via email a couple times a week to all our newspapers. And they were just basically email blasts saying, look, this is the latest what we know about, you know, this federal program or legislation that has been trying to be done in Congress, or this is what we know about being deemed an essential business if your community is going to deal with that issue and so forth. Just a variety of things that we were putting out there. Everything from, you know, the World Health Organization says that newsprint is probably safe and to touch, to handle, and you can't transmit the virus easily via newsprint. You know, that was a big question for a while. So we were sort of serving as a clearinghouse for sharing that information for our newspapers. And then we also were implementing, and we still are doing, basically weekly online virtual meetings with our member newspapers to discuss various issues, to meet with members of our congressional delegations, to share information. Because in part, our annual spring convention, our annual meeting, annual gathering was canceled. And so these virtual get-togethers that we've been hosting for our member newspapers has been a great way for them sort of connect with others that otherwise they just haven't been able to see in person or visit with.
So we've talked about the business model and production changes and those kinds of things. So maybe this is more from a content perspective as well. But overall, how do you think the pandemic has changed journalism as an industry?
Oh, good question. I think for some of our publishers and editors and those that work in newspapers. And not that they didn't know this before, but I think the pandemic has sort of really brought this home in terms of how essential they can be as a newspaper within their community in terms of informing their local residents with important information. And I say that because I hear again and again from editors who say, you know, that they hear from readers how much they appreciate the local newspaper and what they're doing in terms of sharing information. And so I think that just has sort of, you know, caused a lot of our folks, our newspaper folks, to sort of a renewed appreciation for their role as journalists, as members of the press, locally within their communities, and the importance of that. And I think more than anything, that's been one of the key things I've seen across the state.
Are there any other success stories or positive things that you've seen come out of this situation that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, you know, I've also seen, you know, beyond sort of that essential role as journalists and as press within their community, I've seen, newspapers step up in terms of supporting their community, with various endeavors and things that related to, for instance, high school graduations, which, you know, unfortunately, most schools weren't able to hold in-person graduation ceremonies and so forth. So I've seen some neat things that newspapers have done to help celebrate, you know, those graduating seniors within their communities. Everything from, you know, live streaming interviews with students to putting out, you know, extra special type sections and editions that spotlight those graduating seniors. Things that go above and beyond what they would normally do, you know, during a graduation season. So that's been kind of neat to see and kind of fun to see in terms of how the newspapers have stepped up within their community to sort of take a role and say, look, we're all in this together. Let's get through this. And the newspaper is here to kind of help do that too.
You talked a little bit about readers earlier, but tell us a little bit about what changes have you noticed with newspaper readers during the pandemic?
Well, I'd like to think that readers have, you know, that greater appreciation for the role of the newspaper. I mean, I think that's true because, like I said, I've heard from editors and publishers who are hearing it from their subscribers, from people within their community. So, you know, I think people within communities served by newspapers, people who read and subscribe to newspapers, have developed perhaps that greater appreciation for that local connection, that local trusted source that newspaper is, particularly this past spring, you know, as things seemed like every day, throughout the day, you just would hear crazy things happening and no one knew what was going to happen next. And so I think people, you know, renewed that sort of appreciation of having that local source of information, as well as in what I hear from newspapers who have seen some upticks, a few of our dailies who've seen upticks in circulation, sort of have attributed some of that to the fact that people were at home. You know, they weren't able to go to work. They were working from home or they were at home more. And so they were subscribing to the newspaper. They were buying the newspaper because they valued that coming into their home each day or each week, you know, and having that that product.
How has the pandemic influenced you personally?
Oh, boy. Yeah, personally. It's perhaps demonstrated to me sort of how fragile things can be, you know, everything from systems, our way of life, or, you know, commercial activity, our ability to travel and move about, everything that we sort of took for granted, you know, before the pandemic in terms of day-to-day life, how quickly that can change. And to me, that's obviously been frightening to realize that, to see that happen. Not that I probably, you know, didn't realize it before, but it's certainly brought to home this spring by that. So, and as well as just, you know, sort of a greater appreciation for, you know, perhaps slowing down a bit and just appreciating things, you know, because things were sort of, you know, locked down and closed and so forth this spring locally and across the nation. you spent more time, quiet time in some respects. And that I came to appreciate much more, that sort of expanded quiet time that I didn't necessarily strive for prior.
What changes to newspaper operations during the pandemic do you expect will continue after it's over?
Well, you know, I think, number one, a few newspapers have said that have changed, reduced their frequency of print publication, have said, well, right now we're reviewing this as a temporary reduction in print publication. I don't think those print days will come back. I think the newspapers that have said it's a temporary move, I think those will be permanent changes for newspaper operations. And I think as well as, some of our newspapers, particularly, for instance, at the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, our largest newspaper in the state, a Gannett newspaper, the newsroom is working all remotely right now and has been, and I don't think they have a timetable as far as returning to the newsroom. I think you'll see more of that remote work by newsrooms continuing, whether it's, permanent or not, or full-time, I don't know, but I just think some of our larger newspaper operations are going to be much more cognizant about, having employees, newsroom employees and others throughout their buildings who are working from home and not being actually in the physical office location.
What changes to newspaper operations during the pandemic are you most ready to see just done, like ended, go back to normal?
Yeah, well, reductions in, like I said, reductions in pages, the fact that you've seen much thinner newspapers, skinnier newspapers, just because they're trying to save money on printing and so forth. I'm hoping that some of that can end in terms of some newspapers can expand their ability to carry more news and information. But again, that's going to be tied to what their revenues look like and what advertising looks like. And if that comes back some, then I think, newspapers will be in a position to expand some of their news as well. But that's to be determined.
How has the pandemic influenced your own views of the role of journalism in society?
Well, I think it's just reinforced, I think, something obviously that I've believed in and held close to heart for all my life, professional life, and that is, the essential role of journalism within our society, within our country, and the turmoil and the anxiety and the upheaval that we've seen in the past 2-3 months have demonstrated to me, how essential we need good, independent, vigorous journalism in order for our society to function properly. And that has been driven home for me. Not that I didn't believe it before, but it's been reinforced certainly during this time.
So this is probably just maybe repeating what you just said, but for people listening or reading this in the future, not only do we have the pandemic, but we are an extremely divided country right now as well. Mm-hmm. So with all of those things in mind, what do you want readers to know about journalism right now?
I want them to know how fragile journalism is, that it's, it's not a given that journalism will always be there. And when I mean journalism, I mean, the journalism as you and I know it, that fair, independent, robust gathering and reporting of facts and truth and information to an audience, to the public. I worry that that's not necessarily sustainable business-wise. And I think we need citizens to understand that how fragile that is, that it's not just something that will always be there. But if people understand that it can be tenuous, then hopefully they'd be more willing to be part of the solution in terms of figuring out how to sustain and support it so that it is there going forward. So I think that's the key, Terry.
What do you want journalists 100 years from now, who may be covering a new pandemic, what do you want them to know?
Just how important the work that they do is. In other words, if they're doing good work, fair, independent, vigorous reporting of information and facts, how necessary that is in times of great turmoil and change and upheaval, such as a pandemic causes, that they stick to their guide star and doing that work. And if they do, then they will have contributed mightily to finding solutions and getting through, helping society get through these difficult times.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, boy, that's a lot. We covered a lot of ground, and I appreciate that opportunity to have that conversation, because I appreciate you doing this, because it really is so important to capture some of these thoughts and reflections right now, because I thought about that this spring in terms of, you know, dumb me. I wasn't sort of creating a daily journal or a weekly blog that captured some of what was happening here, other than we have our newsletters and so forth that we've been sending out. But just on a personal level, I wish I was doing more of that. So this has been a good opportunity to help sort of reflect on some of that and sort of capture this very special point in history and make sure we don't forget.
Okay, this is the conclusion of this oral history.